ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you're someone who likes to feed the birds in your backyard, new developments in Australia's bird flu outbreak might make you think twice about the habit. Research led by Griffith University suggests up to half of Australians like to feed wild birds. But experts are warning that bird feeders can bring large numbers of birds into close contact, and that potentially creates ideal conditions for disease to spread. The stakes might be getting higher. H5 bird flu has now been detected in mammals in Australia. That raises fresh concerns about how widely the virus could move between species. So should we be rethinking the way we feed wild birds in our own backyards, and could a well-intentioned habit be helping the virus spread? These are things that we've put to Emeritus Professor Daryl Jones from Griffith University, who spent decades researching why people feed wild birds and the effects on birds. He's also the author of Feeding the Birds at Your Table, a guide. He's with us now. Daryl, good evening to you, and welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks, Phil.
Based on your research, how many people do you think regularly feed wild birds in Australia?
Well, we've got data from all over the country now. It's about between 38%, to be absolutely accurate, and 52%. So let's say a third to a half of the people in Australia regularly feed birds. About a third of them feed them every day. Yeah. There's a lot of birds and a lot of people involved.
Yeah, yeah. So
most people are really surprised to hear those sort of figures.
I am surprised, actually. So say them again, more than...
Well, yeah, about a third of households, a third to a half of households in Australia, all across the place,
wow,
from Darwin to Perth to Melbourne to everywhere else. This is a really common thing for people to do. Everybody seems to know that you shouldn't, you know?
Yeah. Putting H5 bird flu to one side for the moment, is it intrinsically a bad thing that this is happening?
No, it's not. And I've gone from being an avid anti-feeder, anti-feeder, to somebody who's now promoting it as much as I can. And because of the way allows us to easily and simply and cheaply connect with nature.
Mm.
You know, to have a wild bird just come in for no reason at all except that you put out a handful of food there, come and visit people, visit you, can be a really profound experience. And it's really important, I think. So that's why there's such a sad moment at the moment for me to say, maybe we need to rethink this at the moment, just while this bird flew around.
I mean, it's important to stress, isn't it, that as far as I understand it, that people, I mean, if you put out seed for parrots, for example, it's not as though this is their primary source of food, is it?
Or, no,
or is
really
it
really important to know that, absolutely. Now, a lot of people put out the food and they think they're single-handedly keeping the whole ecosystem going.
That's right, they're keeping this bird alive. Yeah.
That's right. But what they need to know, and I need to know, and everybody needs to know, is that the birds the food that they take from your place is nothing more than a snack. I like to think of it as a Tim Tam and a cup of tea with a friend.
Right.
Whiz in, grab a thing. How are you going? Off they go. Yeah. Thankfully, less than 10% of their diet comes from these things. This is the birds that visit feeders.
Yeah.
Most of the food they get, it comes the natural way, which is really important.
Yeah.
Lots of people are concerned about the birds. If I stop feeding tomorrow, are they all just going to die of starvation? Well, of course they're not. They're not that dilly, silly. They've been eating for millennia. But what we do is we do something really artificial. We put the food in one place and replenish it every single day. There's no equivalent of that in nature anywhere.
No.
Food's gone from this location, they'd have to move on to the next one.
They'd go and find something else somewhere else.
Exactly.
Gee, where's Daryl? You're saying they're not loyal, dear oh dear.
Yes, I know. I do a lot of counselling to people saying, Mrs. Smith, look, I know that you're single-handedly keeping this family of magpies alive, but I hate to break it to you, but there's six other people, other old ladies in your street doing exactly the same thing.
Now, it's also what people are feeding birds, isn't it? And now there are good and bad things you should be putting out, aren't there?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So
no, that's the problem.
So should you put out mints for kookaburras, for example?
Shouldn't put out mints for anything we've now known.
Right.
Mints doesn't have enough calcium in it. It's a really bad sort of food. It's convenient, I know, convenient and cheap, and that's what. And magpies are the most fed bird in Australia, and most people feed them meat, them mints.
Yeah.
But it's really bad stuff because it doesn't have enough calcium, and if they eat too much of it, they can, it can lead to all sorts of problems if you don't have enough calcium. They start withdrawing the calcium.
What's the best thing to feed a magpie then?
Well, At the moment, it's until somebody come and they're working on it. I know that for a fact. They're working on, you know, you'll be able to go to the pet store in 10 years' time and probably buy magpie food if you
magpie
want.
Magpie
mix or magpie meals or whatever. Yeah, just at the moment, it's best to just feed them dry food, dry pet food, because at least with the pet food, it's all balanced. It's balanced. Might not be specifically for birds, but it's a lot better than mince.
Oh, is that right? So what? So dry pellets, dry dog or cat pellets.
Dog or cat food. Yeah, it's got, you know, it's made for animals.
Right.
And it's much better than mince.
Okay. Now tell me about H5 bird flu. Now this is a concern, isn't it? That because
really
tell me why right now you probably should be thinking of not feeding birds, well, and if you've got a bird feeder, we're getting rid of it.
Yeah, the good news is, I think the magpies are probably the least likely bird to ever catch this thing because they hate everybody else.
Right.
All the other magpies, they have nothing to do with them except when they're fighting. So most of the time, it's going to be a really big problem with colonial birds, you know, like seabirds and water birds that get together in big groups, and they're the place.
Well, by colonial birds, you mean birds that get into colonies, yeah.
Exactly, absolutely. Hmm. Yeah, they're the ones that are most susceptible because in those dense areas with lots of the birds all together, that's where they're going to be, you know, they'll be able to share that disease amongst themselves. With magpies coming, but this is just, you know, because it's not just the magpies that have come. If you've got a magpie, I've mentioned a few times now already, that's because it's a common bird. But, you know, magpies often have kookaburras and butch birds and currawongs and all sorts of other things, meat eaters coming. But if you're putting out seed, you can have a dozen different species coming all together, all mixing. You know, if any of those birds are sick at all, it doesn't have to be just bird flu, any sort of sickness, that's the obvious place for them to spread at your feet.
Because H5 bird flu, how does it spread between birds anyway?
Well, we're not entirely sure, but it seems to have just come in direct contact, you know, like fighting and eating the same
thing. Well, beak to beak, as it were.
Beak to beak, or saliva, or in water.
Right.
We know that it lasts pretty well in water. So that means we also have to think about our bird baths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, gee, a lot of people would not be taking that well, would they? Because
not at all.
Because bird baths in gardens are commonplace, aren't they? Birds love them.
Yeah, so what I'm doing now at the moment is trying to people, what are we going to do about this?
Hmm.
If you can't, you know, it's the best thing at the moment is to stop feeding altogether.
Right.
But don't stop putting out water for a thing. I mean, it's going to be a hot, dry summer by all accounts, so we have to make sure that the water is there. And just clean it out every day, you know, wash it out thoroughly, scrub it down and make sure it's clean.
Right.
As long as you're doing that every day, it'll be fine.
So
if you're going to feed the birds, take the responsibility of feeding them. You've got to make sure that you clean that spot where they're coming every single day and never put out too much food. So two things, don't put out too much because it's not all the food they need. It's just we're the beneficiaries, not the birds.
Mm-hmm.
They like to come and visit us, and that's a wonderful thing. But if we're going to, you know, if it encourages lots of birds to mix and they wouldn't normally be mixing, then that's what we're really worried about. So if you're going to do it, limit the how much food, and then also clean it down really thoroughly.
Right. You say magpies are not very susceptible to getting bird flu. What about our glorious parrots?
Yeah, well, rainbow lorikeets get around in big groups, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I suppose they do. They do.
They're a worry. But we simply don't know. It's all happening so fast and so rapidly. And it's a real concern. And especially this mixing with getting into the mammal population with the seals and a dolphin now.
Why are they catching it? Are they eating the birds or is it just contact with the bird?
I think we don't exactly know, but it's probably just the contact. But any time when birds die, usually you don't even see a dead bird because they're so flimsy. You know, their skeletons are really light and they're made of feathers and they just vanish really fast. They just decompose very quickly. But when you see a whole lot of dead birds, that's one of the things you need to do. If anybody sees a whole pile of dead birds, just to make sure it's not dead bird flu, certainly don't touch them, but report that to a vet, and the vets have now got a big network to talk to each other and get all the information they can.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, for people who genuinely feed birds because they genuinely care about them and they enjoy the connection with nature, you're saying, I mean, can they continue enjoying this without feeding them?
Yes, I hope so. I hope they can. I mean, this has been my mission now. Yeah. Everything I write lots of books and things, is all about connecting with nature. And here I am telling people not to because it's been such an easy way. So it's a tough time to be around at the moment. But you can do it. I mean, you can still enjoy them. And that's why I'm saying you can still put out, if you put out a handful of seed and you just have a half a dozen birds coming and not mixing very much, that's okay, you know. And the types of things that we get mostly coming to our neighbourhood, you know, suburban setups with her feeder, are not sort of the ones that are most likely to have this bird flu. But if you had, you know, like when it gets into the pigeon population, and here I'm living in Melbourne now, these things are like, you know, now that it's in the silver gull population, seagulls, they're everywhere. Go to the MCG and there's thousands of them floating around. You just think how many of these have got the bird flu.
Got bird flu, yeah. Yeah, gee whiz. Because what do you think's going to happen, Daryl? Australia's one of the last places in the world to get this thing, and we can't stop it. We know that.
The trouble is, once you get it, it's almost 100% mortality rate, which is terrible. Yeah. Like, if you will die almost certainly if you're a bird. So that's pretty bad. Now, I think it's going to be we're in for a catastrophic time, maybe just the next couple of years.
How long is it going to last, do you think?
I have no idea. Mm. We really don't know anything about this. But so we're scrambling, and I have to say the government's not doing a very good job of getting ready for this because it would be no.
Well, what can they actually do though, Daryl?
Well, what they're doing at the moment is down here in Melbourne, they're starting to vaccinate their little penguins because they're one of the primary. You know, little penguins are a classic seabird that colonises, gets around in groups, and so they're going to be really susceptible. We don't want them lost.
Hmm.
But the little bush birds are mostly going to be fine.
You can't vaccinate wild birds, can you? Because there's no practical means of doing so.
No. But you can, like the colonies of penguins. You can imagine them doing that. But yeah, for the others, I don't know. There's nothing I can do about those. Yeah, we just.
Do you think some species are just not going to survive?
Yep, I think I'm afraid that's the case. We've got too many birds close to the edge of the extinction already. If they get nailed, you know, they can't cope with a whole lot of mortality.
Are there any birds that don't get it?
Oh, we don't know yet. Oh. I mean, I can say pretty much the majority of birds won't have a chance, won't get it. It won't be killing everything.
Right.
We can already predict which ones are susceptible. For some reason I don't understand, black swans are a real concern. They seem to be incredibly susceptible to this thing and other bird flu type diseases.
What about kookaburras? Do they get it?
They could get it, but how would they get it? You know, they're not going to be. I guess they could be. Yeah, I don't know.
They don't hang around with other birds, do they?
No, they don't. But one way they could get it is if there was an infectious bird came and ate some meal, you know, at a feeder, and then the magpies came down and took what was left. Not the magpies, the kookaburras. That's when they could get it. Could be caught there. Most of the familiar bush birds are not going to be susceptible. They're not.
What about really endangered birds like the swift parrot and things like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, the good thing for those, the only good thing about it is that there's so few of them that they have much of a chance of catching this thing. But they don't like each other, so they keep away from one another. Right. So,
but flocking birds like sulfur-crested cockatoos, for example.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Waiting for it.
Right.
Cockatoos and galahs and corellas, all those birds. With
gangs and all those beautiful birds, yeah. It's a worry, isn't it? Might there be some side benefit in the sense that it might clobber the Indian minor population, which is a nuisance bird?
Probably if it got into the minor population, they mix with everybody, so they're going to be spreading it wide and far. That's the only problem.
Yeah.
I'm desperately trying to look for as you are, you know, something positive to come from this, and I'm not sure there's going to be very many positive things.
So, in short, we don't know how long it's going to last, but it's going to last for some years, you think?
It's going to last for some years. There's going to be a lot of deaths, I'm afraid.
Daryl, I'd like to say great to talk with you, but
I know it's not a good populate, but good conversation.
But in the meantime, probably stop feeding birds. And if you do,
that's right. If you can, stop it. They don't need it. They'll probably complain and start knocking on the window and say, "Where's my tucker for the day?"
Yeah.
Could be used to it for years, probably. Not too much food. make if you're going to clean if you're going to feed and you, lots of people will anyway. Make sure you just keep it really clean
and space keep, and maybe space it out on the veranda.
Space it out, absolutely. Yeah, space it out because what you're trying to do is minimise the contact with the birds.
Yeah,
with the birds. And of course, this immediately makes me think. Worst thing we can do is hand feed them. Wonderful experience when you do it, you know, because it's such an intimate thing to do with a wild bird. But that's asking for trouble, that one.
Yeah. All right, Daryl, let's hope for the best. But as you say, outlook is not good. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. See you.
Emeritus Professor Daryl Jones from Griffith University.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.